In a dystopian Earth where poverty and government control have stripped away most freedoms, sisters Amber and Nikki Bierce face eviction after their mother's suicide. Practical-minded Amber makes a desperate choice, signing them up for the Manifestor's colonization program to a planet called Plymouth. Despite Nikki's tearful resistance, they board the massive colony ship Pioneer, undergoing cryosleep for the journey. But when Amber awakens, it's to smoke, screams, and devastation. The ship has crashed on an unknown alien world, with only a fraction of the 50,000 colonists surviving. As guilt consumes Amber, her sister never wanted to come. The survivors gather under the self-appointed leadership of Crewman Scott, whose charismatic speeches mask disturbing plans for the remaining women. During a disastrous hunting expedition, Amber encounters Miorak, a towering reptilian warrior on religious pilgrimage. Despite his initial instinct to kill her, he recognizes her intelligence and personhood. Their attempts at communication are frustrating but productive, as Amber convinces him to follow her back to camp. Miorak's arrival creates immediate tension with Scott, who sees the alien as a threat to his authority. When the Pioneer explodes in the distance, Miorak takes control with unwavering determination. They are my people now, and it's time they knew it. As they traverse the harsh landscape, he becomes both protector and instructor to the survivors, particularly Amber, teaching her survival skills with military precision that reveals his genuine investment in her well-being. The group splinters upon discovering ancient ruins. Scott manipulates the survivors with false promises of rescue technology, alienating Amber from the others, including her sister. When Amber finally erupts, "There is no fucking ship, you lying son of a bitch! We are never going home!" the group turns against her. Scott's betrayal culminates when he secretly drugs Amber and abandons her unconscious body, convincing the others she's dying. Miorak discovers the plot too late, but reclaims her belongings and watches over her, commanding, "I found you, I own you, and I forbid you to die." After Amber recovers, they continue alone. Their relationship deepens through shared vulnerabilities. He reveals his father died in Judgment with Shul, while she confesses her mother's suicide. Their growing attraction leads to an intimate encounter that Miorak considers a religious marriage ritual. He cuts a lock of her hair, drives his knife into the ground, and invokes his god Shul to make Amber worthy. This creates profound misunderstandings. Miorak believes they are divinely married, while Amber rejects his claim of possession. Despite their conflicts, their connection strengthens as they journey toward Zmetej, the holy shrine where Miorak seeks guidance. Their journey takes a devastating turn when raiders capture Amber during Miorak's absence. Under the ruthless Zuka, she endures abuse while maintaining her identity through small defiances. Miorak becomes an unstoppable force of vengeance, launching a legendary assault, a single warrior against an entire camp. Afterward, they face a moral test when Amber discovers Zuka's abandoned infant. While Miorak sees only an abomination without a soul, according to his faith, Amber recognizes an innocent, deserving compassion. Her dedication forces Miorak to question his religious boundaries, becoming a catalyst for his spiritual growth as her compassion reshapes his understanding of redemption. At Zmetej, the holy shrine, Miorak approaches with reverence, speaking sacred words that open massive doors, revealing not divinity, but a sterile military installation. Holographic recordings show how scientists engineered his entire religion after a pandemic, creating prohibitions against technology to prevent access to weapons and elevating those genetically resistant as the warrior caste. Devastated, Miorak cries, "There is no God." In the silence, Amber makes a startling revelation. Despite their different evolutionary paths and incompatible biology, she's pregnant. "What the hell do you call that if it isn't God?" Her words suggest faith and science aren't necessarily exclusive. After surviving a final confrontation with raiders and the devastating loss of Nitshi to suicide, Amber and Miorak are discovered by Lord Steward Jaezoon, who brings them to House Uyane to recover. A miracle occurs. The clouds clear and the sun shines in a green sky, beginning the same day they arrived. Religious authorities expect Miorak to explain this phenomenon. He tells Jaezoon that Sheol spoke to him, though his words were not a comfort. The word given to the prophet was for an age now ended. They must learn to judge with wisdom instead of blades, show mercy, and forgive. Breaking tradition, Miorak calls Amber by her name rather than wife, explaining that if God exists, surely he would want me to call my wife by her beautiful name. As the sun sets and bells ring, they acknowledge that, despite everything, life is good. The last hour of Gan ended, the hour of Uyane began, and in the east, the first star of evening came out. The last hour of Gan challenges us to question our assumptions about civilization, religion, and humanity itself. Through its unflinching portrayal of survival under extreme circumstances, it reveals how crisis either breaks or strengthens social bonds. Amber and Miorak's journey represents not just physical survival, but the evolution of belief systems when confronted with evidence that challenges everything they've known. Their impossible pregnancy becomes the ultimate symbol, a miracle defying scientific explanation, forcing both to expand their understanding of what's possible. What makes us human when stripped of everything familiar? Is it our capacity for adaptation, for connection across seemingly insurmountable differences? Perhaps true faith isn't about clinging to dogma, but embracing uncertainty with courage. When everything we believed has been stripped away, we sometimes discover something even more precious, a truth that transcends worlds and unites them in ways neither could have imagined alone. In the end, it's not about which world we come from, but the one we choose to build together. Throughout their journey, Amber and Miorak undergo profound transformations that challenge their core identities. Amber evolves from a practical survivor focused on protection to becoming a bridge between worlds, translator, diplomat, and catalyst for religious reformation. Her impossible pregnancy symbolizes new possibilities and the ultimate crossing of boundaries. Miorak's transformation is equally significant. His identity as a warrior priest, built on rigid doctrine, shatters when he discovers his religion was engineered. Through his relationship with Amber, he reconstructs his faith on compassionate foundations, evolving from blind follower to thoughtful reformer who judges with wisdom instead of blades. The novel suggests that identity, personal, cultural, or religious, is adaptable rather than fixed. When confronted with contradictory evidence, we can either cling to familiar structures or embrace growth. Amber and Miorak's journey demonstrates that profound connections emerge when we question fundamental assumptions and rebuild from the fragments of what we once considered immutable truth.